Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, April 23rd, 2024, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-host, Anastasia. Well, good news, everybody. Mercury goes direct on Thursday this week, so if you've been having a challenge with communication or electronics, it will start to improve, and I know that it's something I'm really glad that we don't have to wait any longer and deal with all that stuff. So our guest this evening is best-selling author Ann Crawford, who is an alumni of multiple Starseed Quests and has been our radio guest many times before. She believes in love at first sight, that good always prevails, and that we're here for those wild, wonderful, way out there visions of ours to come alive. She is the best-selling and award-winning author of 10 life-affirming books that weave tales of love and intrigue and take readers on mystical journeys. Her books include stories about angels, a walk-in, a healer during the burning times, Mary Magdalene, and an actor whose BFF committed suicide. Her latest book, Boomerangs, is about a boomer ex-flower child still living like it's 1969, a Gen X Buick-driving religious trumper, and a Gen Z 20-year-old trans woman all under one roof. What could possibly go right? Anne is also an award-winning filmmaker. Her first movie was about a group of vets returning to Vietnam, and her second movie involved traveling around the world and interviewing people from all walks of life, heads of state, street kids, academics, artists, the folks of this world, on how they envisioned creating world peace. Anne is an award-winning humanitarian as well. Her new book, Boomerangs, is available on Amazon tomorrow, and her website is annecrawford.net. At the top of the show, it's Anastasia's Starseed News, bringing topics of interest and hope to starseeds that you won't hear in the mainstream. And we'd like to thank Kathy for hosting the switchboard tonight for anyone who may have a question or comment. And if you are an astrologer and are ready to learn advanced galactic astrology, please email me, Arielle@starseedhotline.com. Lavendar and I are gathering a small group of qualified people to learn the starseed codes. Our main website, of course, is starseedhotline.com, and the Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your astrological chart, and the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one Zoom session. We also have a new daily transit service to help you navigate your life and mission with greater success, even if you know little or nothing about astrology. And remember, if you have a birthday coming up, you're going to get a window of 10 hours of great manifestation power. So you need to find out exactly when that happens by requesting your solar return timing. Just do that a week or two before your birthday. But if you want a reading of that chart, you'll need to order it about 2 months before your birthday. So first up, I would like to introduce Anastasia with her fascinating Starseed News.
Oh, hello, everybody. Great to be with
hello.
You. Beautiful April evening. Happy to be here. We've got some news tonight. Well, I'm going to start out by saying that I just don't like acronyms very well, but more dealing with the government or science, we're going to get plenty of them. So our first headline for this evening is the EPA cracks down on PFAs. What does that mean? Well, for the first time, the Environmental Protection Agency, also known as the EPA, has set limits for six types of hazardous per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, PFAs, that are found in drinking water. This is a good story here. Known as forever chemicals, you've all heard of them, because they do not naturally break down, PFAs are common in the environment and pose significant health risks. The EPA's action will reduce PFAS exposure for about, and I couldn't figure this out, 100 million people, according to officials. Why not all of the country? Can't figure that out. But anyway, it's supposed to reduce exposure for about 100 million people. Public health advocates call the limits historic and estimate that they can save and prevent thousands of illnesses and save thousands of lives. So what was so hard about that, I wonder? They could have done that a long time ago. But they're doing it. They did it. So that's good. Have you ever thought about what might be quite probably one of the biggest, coolest, and most underrated libraries in the world might be? Well, since Alexandria went by the wayside so very long ago, how about the Internet Archive and the Wayback Machine? Well, the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine is a digital archive of the entire Internet and enables any and everybody to track through the digital time and look at what websites have looked like at different moments in the World Wide Web's history. Gosh, and of course,
wow.
I remember when it was just a twinkle in God's eye. There wasn't such a thing. And when it came on board, it was the Wild West. It was fun in those early days. Well, the Internet Archive, which is at archive.org, for those of you who are not familiar with it, you got to check it out, archive.org. This site was founded by somebody called Brewster Colley, and he started archiving the web in 1996 and has saved nearly a trillion web pages since then and now probably has more valuable data about the Internet and users than any other company in the world, and admirably refuses to collect or sell user data despite pressure from many others who want them to do just that. They take this independence because the organization is funded entirely by grants, donations, and partnerships. What a worthwhile cause.
Yeah.
In addition to web pages, they also archive video, software, music, and even have a growing archive for television. Well, that could be rather prescient in this day and age because many TV networks are not keeping their old content, and so this is the only place that we can find things that we know they said, but we can't find proof that they said it, and now it is archived. The Internet Archive also operates out of a physical building in, as you might suspect, perfect San Francisco. Now, if you've ever seen the logo of the Internet Archive, it looks rather, I don't know, Grecian, Roman, looks temple-like, very fancy building, and that's why they bought this building. It's an old Christian Science church. They bought it because it looked exactly like their logo. Inside this building, they still have the pews, the organ, the stained glass windows, and other remnants from the church. And if you're in town in San Francisco, you can book a free tour any Friday. Now, the company hosts all of the data themselves. That's pretty monumental. They have physical servers in San Francisco, but they also have backups of the data in various locations around the world. Got all their bases covered.
Yeah.
Without the endeavors of the Internet Archive, it is highly likely that one of the most transformative technologies in history will be lost with time. That may not seem like a big deal right now, but in a sense, they're one of the few defensive forces against the many actors who want various parts of the web to disappear for one reason or another. So if you'd like to support the organization's work, please go to internetarchive.org/donate. Check it out. Well, here's a story for this. This is it. Bill Gates has been caught fixing a pothole. There's even a photograph of him with a shovel in his hand. It's not something you'd ever expect to hear, but apparently, he actually did. The photograph is there. I assume it's real. Who knows these days? But they say the reason that this even made the news is that the unique material he used for the asphalt repair is made with carbon, a special kind of carbon that's made from decarbonized natural gas that is decarbonized in the process of making hydrogen. Of course, hydrogen is considered a green product, but of course, carbon is not. So this was sort of a promo. This photograph was sort of a promo shot. The billionaire was an early investor in the Seattle-based company that makes this eco-friendly asphalt. He said on a social media site, I quote, "I filled a pothole and reduced greenhouse gas emissions with an innovative process that removes carbon from natural gas to get emissions-free hydrogen. Modern hydrogen is decarbonizing the energy market. And by sequestering that carbon in asphalt used to build roads and repair potholes, the company is decarbonizing the building materials market." So what we're looking at is asphalt that is made from a process that removes carbon from fuel and gives us hydrogen. So I tell you, people are being so creative, solving so many problems relative to emissions and such. I can't even imagine that we could still have a problem with all of the things that are rolling off the conveyor belt, so to speak, that this literally production line of things that they are uncovering. We talk about every news cycle, and there's always infinitely more than I can even report on. So everybody is on it. They really are. Well, this is a miracle operation that has occurred, a surgery for a 3-year-old child with a genetic condition that caused blindness. But she is doing incredibly well after a unique pioneering surgery to restore her eyesight. The UK is the only country performing something called keyhole surgery, eye surgery, that will inject healthy copies of a gene into the person's eyes. The patient that has the blind problem or the serious vision problem gets genes injected into their eyes. This reverses the blindness in children born with any rare condition, one in particular. That means they can only distinguish between light and dark. That's the only thing they can see. And it has given this little girl a chance to see normally. What do you think about that?
Wow.
A keyhole operation that injects a gene that reverses blindness. Some of these things really just make you dizzy, the kind of transformations and changes that are occurring so quickly. Let's talk about California for a minute. This is surprising. California for the future of clean energy, because California has hit a new renewables record after exceeding 100% of grid demand with clean energy sources for 30 of the past 38 days. What does that mean? Well, data shows that supply from geothermal, hydro, solar, and wind exceeded demand for most days since the start of March. All of the energy in the state of California for 30 of the last 38 days was done with renewables. The grid was supplied with renewable energies. Really? That is totally awesome. See, what did I tell
you?
Really? I mean, they are really moving on this. That's just awesome. I had no idea. I had no idea that it was that together. Well, there has been a growing body of evidence that suggests that foxes were once a favorite companion of humans. Scientists have conducted years of tests on a fox found in an ancient burial site in Argentina, and they discovered that the fox ate the same food that the group of humans did, and they said may have been fed by multiple members of the community. It was given an honored burial placement. They think that it was tame and kept as a pet. The notion of foxes as pets in South America aligns with evidence from other fox burials in Europe and Asia. All in all, it adds to the very likely assumption that humans have always turned to other nearby species for companionship, and that foxes, along with dogs or wild dogs, were their favorites. So, foxes, wow. We are learning so much stuff. The kinds of dinosaur bones they're uncovering is just incredible. But that's not the subject I'm going to talk to you tonight. I want to talk to you about Dolly Parton's free library. She's adorable. I think this is the sweetest story. Dolly Parton has developed a free children's book program that is expanding statewide in the state of Virginia. Thanks to Dolly's Imagination Library program, all children in the state of up to the age of 5 will receive one free book a month through the mail. The little engine that could left an indelible mark on Dolly Parton as a child. Don't you remember that story? I certainly do. I liked it as well. Well, Dolly loved the classic tale of perseverance so much as a child that this country singer wants it to be the first book kids receive when they sign up for Dolly Parton's Imagination Library. Children registered with the Imagination Library from birth will receive up to 60 books free of charge until they're 5 years old. The last book children receive from the program is Look Out, Kindergarten, Here I Come. How sweet. How sweet. What a beautiful thing to do. Bless her heart. 60 books. Wow. That is just a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful, sweet thing. The little engine that could. You know, all of you out there, if you don't remember that or you never heard that early childhood story, look it up. You read that tonight, and the next when you catch the show, whether you play it tomorrow or whenever, when you hear this newscast, you look up The Little Engine That Could and read that. And that'll help you get going. That's going to remind you. you can if you think you can. And everybody needs to read that. It's a wonderful tale, and it's significant. You'll recognize that right away. You're star seeds, after all. You know that you can, and you know that what you think makes a difference. Well, this is a wild one. You know, these advertisers are just up to mischief all the time. Whatever they can do to get you to buy something, they'll do it. Well, now they have scented billboards that smell like French fries. But wait, I'll tell you the whole story. They decided that a delicious smell could inspire cravings in a person and lure people back into a restaurant. You smell something and you want it, so you say, hey, I want some of that. I'm going to go get it. Well, McDonald's put that smell power to the test by deploying a series of billboards diffusing the scent of its best-selling French fries. Now, this happened overseas. An Amsterdam-based ad agency collaborated with a company that specializes in unusual billboards, and they made some unbranded, perfectly blank, completely blank, red and yellow billboards, which actually are the colors on the McDonald's fry packages. But they're plain. There's no writing on them at all. And in the back of these billboards, there was a hidden compartment where they stored a bunch of French fries. An internal heater and a ventilation system intensified the smell of the French fries and directed the odor toward anyone walking within 15 feet of the billboards. These unbranded billboards were placed within 600 feet of the nearest McDonald's store. A marketing officer for the ad agency says, smell has been proven to be more effective at sparking clear and emotional memories than images. And actually, smell is stored in a unique part of the brain. Did you know that? It's not like any of the other senses. Smell is recorded in the emotional part of the brain. So they know what they're doing. Anyway, he went on to say, with the inclusion of this next sense in our advertising, meaning smell, we found a new way to remind people of good times at McDonald's. We found a new way to make money, is what he means. The novel olfactory experiment captured thousands of bystanders walking in front of the billboard reacting to the smell. There's photographs of people stopping and sniffing. They get, what is the smell coming from? As with all billboards, they said people could look away, but they couldn't smell away. When interviewed later, most recognized that it was McDonald's fries that they were smelling. As all of the experimental billboards were placed within easy walking distance of a McDonald's restaurant, any cravings the display inspired could be easily satisfied. Unfortunately, the agency hasn't revealed how many people acted upon their olfactory experience, their nose smelling, by popping into their nearest McDonald's to satisfy their cravings for French fries. So they will stoop to any means necessary. On guard, I tell you. Consumers beware. All right. This is an interesting story. I once remember years ago when biofuels were just kind of new, and they were discussing about how we could make biofuel from waste, you know. But they always said human waste, it wasn't possible. Well, something's changed between now and 100 years ago when I last remember being told that, because the fact is that poo-poo happens. because an airline has ordered fuel made from human waste. The company is called, and don't laugh, it's called Wizz Air. It's a budget airline based in Hungary with routes throughout Europe, and it has placed an order for 525,000 metric tons of sustainable aviation fuel made from human waste. They're doing it. The airline estimates that the new sustainable fuel could reduce its carbon emissions by 100,000 tons per year. And according to the International Energy Agency, the aviation industry is responsible for about 2% of global carbon emissions, but advancements such as SAF can reduce the impact of air travel. This will not, however, be the first transport initiative to run on human waste. In Spain, Barcelona's bus fleet is going to be the first to run on biomethane obtained from sewage and will reduce its carbon footprint by more than 85% thanks to the use of this renewable fuel from human waste, which is completely neutral in its emissions. Now, if they can do that, that means that we have a permanent, recyclable, reusable, endless supply of material to make carbon-free fuel. That's what that means. As long as there's people, there's going to be waste. And as long as this waste can be turned into fuel, we've got all the gas we could ever want. Methane-free.
I'm sorry. I was like, ooh, what's that aroma? I want to go take an airplane ride.
No kidding. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? No kidding. Absolutely. So we'll we might need more French fry billboards around just to help us out a little bit. We might need more fragrant billboards as this technology advances. We will wonder what we're going to do with our noses. We'll see how it goes. Gosh. But, you know, they're almost out to me from what I can see just by what I'm reading. And I don't know. You know, you don't know. You read, people report. I'm not out there, not a real investigator, a real reporter, nothing like that. But, I mean, if you went out and checked it out, it seems like they're almost outpacing the demand. I mean, this discovery into green energy is just going every direction conceivable. I mean, there's hundreds of alternatives, probably thousands. And everybody's working on it, and it seems as though, you know, at some point we're going to have an overabundance of that sort of thing. I'm sure they'll use it for something else, but there's just absolutely no reason, based on what I'm reading, that any of the old programs that we've come along with this far should ever have to be sustained at all. I mean, right. No reason whatsoever. Well, how about this, you guys? You know, gosh, houses are outrageous. I mean, they talk about the price of property and interest rates and homelessness. Bless the people's hearts. I mean, there is a big hubbub in Oregon about homeless people in Grants Pass and the city taking this problem to the Supreme Court, which is ruling on it now to decide if homeless people should be incarcerated or fined for having to sleep on public streets. That is not the subject for this evening, but it does make you think. When we understand that Disney, who is experiencing a fall of revenue, decreasing revenue from cinema and streaming, it's not doing so good, has decided to branch out its venture. It's going to expand its interests. It has decided to go into property development, and they're going to call it the Disney Experience Division. They're going to... And the next, they're going to start this in the California desert near Palm Springs. And they're in the process of developing a place called Cotino. Cotino. They call it a story living by Disney, a community. Now, that wasn't very clear, so I'll continue. Now, many Disney fans are going to flip over this. They're going to love it. But with house prices in this development that they're making from 1 to 2 million, not everybody's going to be able to live in what they're calling the happiest place on earth. Disney is building a subdivision. Now, at the intersection of Frank Sinatra Drive and Bob Hope Drive, named after two Hollywood celebrities who used to frequent the area's exclusive country clubs, a billboard announces the arrival of Cotino, a story living by Disney community. Now, in this square mile of desert near Palm Springs, there will soon be A Gleaming New World of 2,000 Homes, which have been designed by Disney Imagineers. That's really a word. That's what they call them, Disney Imagineers. They're arranged around a 24-acre lake, kept in a natural shade of Avatar Blue all year round, where every aspect of life will be curated by the Disney Corporation. Cotino will offer superfans a place to live out their wildest dreams, a chance to live in a Disney movie where the story is all about you. It will feature a clubhouse inspired by the futuristic mansion from Incredibles 2, where neighbors can bond over Disney 3-themed art lessons, enjoy dinners inspired by Disney stories, and join family days with Disney-related activities. The House of Mouse-themed homes promise to be infused with the company's special brand of magic, Magic Houses, while a forthcoming town center will feature a street market where local artists will sell Disney-themed arts and crafts. There will be abundant with opportunities for laughter. That's a quote. Cotino seems to be as close as you can get to living in Disneyland itself, with every detail honed by the Disney Imagineers and every service provided by Disney cast members, the staff, Mickey and Minnie, so on and so forth, will be there on your city streets. Is it crazy or is it brilliant? We shall see. Time will tell. That is the ultimate in escapism, but there it is. It's going to be, some people are going to have fun. Well, this is something that's never been done before. This is a great story and a great way to end my portion of the show tonight. A 30-acre facility in Oklahoma was previously used for research testing on dogs and cats. You know, that really used to be done and nobody gave a thought about it. But that's not so popular anymore. There's an awakening and people object. People really vehemently object. So what's happening now to that 30-acre facility in Oklahoma? Now it's a rehabilitation sanctuary for former lab animals. This is a 180-degree transformation thanks to an animal rights lawyer and founder of the Beagle Freedom Project and the facility's former owner. Taking note of the facility's beauty on some of her visits to pick up animals, they just put their heads together and decided to buy the property and turn it into an animal sanctuary. They negotiated, they finalized the sale, they shut down all the testing, and put the 200-plus cats and dogs in their own care. She said this has never been done. Nobody has ever closed down an animal testing facility and turned it into a rehab sanctuary.
Aww.
Well, how awesome is that? You know, there are some pretty wonderful, beautiful people out there doing wonderful, beautiful things. And I love each and every one of them. And speaking of that, I love each and every one of you, too. So from my heart to each one of you, have a beautiful couple of weeks. Keep on shining. Stay positive. Do your thing. Make the world better. Thank you so much, mm-hmm. Arielle. And by the way, as I praise people, I want to say something nice about tonight's guest. I looked at her blog. Bless her heart. She says beautiful things. She wrote a piece about there is no such thing as a random person. And I want to thank her for that. I thought that was tremendous. So love all around, everybody, and I will catch you next time. Good night.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Anastasia. You take care until we meet in 2 weeks.
Yes, you bet.
Okay. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I am going to get Ann Crawford on the line with us. Hey, Ann.
Hey there.
Well, welcome to the show. We're so happy that you're here.
I'm so happy to be here, too. I love hanging out with you.
Yeah, well, I know we've had you join us at the Quest many times, and I know you've been on the radio show many times, so you're kind of like part of the family. So I remember that you had said that during the pandemic you wrote a book. And as I was reading the book, I realized that this was the one you were talking about. So
you
put in a lot of time on this.
I did. The one before it, Fresh Off the Starship, I wrote and published in 5 months. This one, here.
Yeah.
So, they vary.
Yeah. But you've written so many great books, which towards the end of our time, I want to kind of recap because not everyone is familiar with your I don't know what the word is, your litany of work, your catalog, whatever you want to call it. So, but let's talk about Bazoomerangs. The first thing I want to ask is, how did you come up with that name?
You know, the names often just come without any help from me whatsoever. The names of the people and the names of the book just present themselves to me, and it's like I don't have a choice about it. And along the way, I would say to people, what do you think of a name? No, don't use it. But then all the people in the publishing world loved it because it stands out so much. So, but it came on its own. And it is Star, the hippie grandmother, talks about how they're more similar than they like to admit, the three women, and that things boomerang back and forth through the generations. And then at another point she says, they don't just boomerang. These things bazoomerang. They come back again and again and again. So that's where the word comes from, made up. I make up a lot of words.
Yeah, well, there's no law against that. Yeah. Sometimes you have to create a word that just fits your need.
Right.
Apart from, you know, being in quarantine, what else would a writer do? What was your inspiration or motivation for this work?
Well, a long time ago, when a friend of a family who was gay, wasn't even gender, posted on Facebook about his conservative mom and how he was just having a really hard time with her. And I just thought, and she was in Topeka, Kansas. And I just thought, I wonder what she's going through in a small town in Topeka, Kansas, truly conservative and all that. And that's how that was the germ of the book. And over the years, as I met more and more gender people, the whole book just popped in with the whole three generations, with the grandmother being like a foil to the other two, and the conservative mom and the trans 20-year-old with an attitude like all 20-year-olds. So, but that's where it came from. And being me, it still has spiritual aspects thrown in throughout, especially from the grandmother, but really from all three of them. And there aren't any villains in it. Like I say, she's a conservative Trumper, but that's just who she is, and that's not a bad thing. It's just when she's lined up with these other two, it's just fireworks.
Yeah. It was interesting to watch you or watch, read, perceive how you establish these different personalities, and then you weave them together. The book is about the three people, the grandmother,
right,
the mother, and then the daughter. So, it was very interesting to see the dynamics between, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate. People that have had, let's say, parental disapproval. Yeah. But somehow it skipped the generation, because then the 20-year-old and the grandmother had a real close bond.
Right.
So, And I did appreciate the, you know, weaving it in of some of your own spiritual understanding. But yeah, I kind of had the feeling like I was reading a private diary.
Well, they're pouring their hearts out. Their problems,
right,
their joys, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah, I thought this was a very a different approach for, you know, it's very conversational. It's almost like you're watching a movie, because
right.
the dialogue
right.
is very, you know, very natural, like, you know, the way people of that generation would talk or the people of the next generation would talk. But yeah, it seemed like it was almost like a private diary or a journal between
right.
for all three of them.
And it was so much fun to write. I loved hanging out with these three, all three of them, equally. Okay, maybe not totally equally. But I did love making each one, you know, finding out what made each one tick. I mean, this was so much fun to write. I think of all of my books, this was the most fun to write.
Well, there was a bit of a lighthearted, even though some of the subject matter was pretty dramatic, but it was, you know, the comments that they would make to and about each other. There was definitely some humor woven in there, which was a nice balance to some of the you know, dramatic or more intense topics that evolves between them.
Thank you.
Yeah,
that is my specialty, to be very funny and go very deep. And a friend of mine who's also an author, someone I respect a lot, once said to me, your use of humor is majestic because you let these deep, profound thoughts go in through the humor. Great, according to her. So that is my specialty. I love doing that.
Well, I mean, when you think of it, you know, humor, comedy, laughter, it raises your frequency.
Right.
So if you want to get a serious topic conveyed, if you raise the frequency first, it's better received.
Right.
Possibly,
and
yeah.
And in comedy, in stand-up comedy, they say comedy is from tragedy plus time. That was an interesting thing to learn.
Yeah. And you were doing stand-up comedy, weren't you?
I was. And if I do it again, I'm going to get on stage and say, the last time I stood on this stage, the whole world shut down for 2 years. So I've been a little nervous about coming back. But I still write up some material, and I will get back to it. I think I wanted to get this book out before I got back to it. Really wanted to focus on that. So, and
yeah,
there was the
yeah.
2 year.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was just before the pandemic, when
right.
you were doing your stand up, and
it was literally,
you know,
like 2 weeks before everything shut down. I was doing it.
Well, it may seem coincidental, but that's all it is.
Right.
Yeah. But it, you know,
I'll get back to it.
Yeah, it's just more, you know, rich, fertile ground for new material.
Right.
Yeah. So, and when you were doing your stand up, did you kind of have, you know, like a, you know, 5 minutes that you would do and just tell your stories and your jokes?
Yeah. And I talk about all kinds of things. Like, I've been around the world twice, like two complete circumnavigations of the globe. And one country I've been to a few times is Vietnam, and I'm almost 6 feet tall, and with red hair, blue eyes, and freckles. And people would come up to me and rub my arm, like to see if my freckles were bumps or if they rubbed off or something. These beautiful people would come up and just like rub my face. It was quite something. So I have a lot of stories like that I share. It's fun.
Yeah, well, you know what, I mean, if you take that stance, that perspective, 3D life is just rife with good material. You know, all you have to do is go out and about, you know, if you don't get angry about something, you can find the humor in it.
Right. We've got to laugh. Oh, these days especially. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. So I thought the book was really real, you know, genuine, funny in places, sad in places, but very relatable. Because I'm sure everybody, has someone in their life that's either like the Graham, the mom, Alice, or Jay, the 20-year-old trans. So there's something relatable, I'm sure, for everybody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I had an aunt that was very much like the mother, you know. Yeah. It's her way or the highway. So look, now you were mentioning what was Fresh Off the Starship. Is that the one you did in like 5 months, start to finish?
Yes. I was driving back from Arkansas, actually, in 2018, and I stopped on the Kansas Highway on 80 going through, or 70 going through Kansas. And it was one of those clear nights. It was windy, so there was no debris up in the sky or anything. It was just the most magnificent skyscape I'd ever seen. All the stars, planets, no moon. The story had been building. And when I got home, I just sat down and wrote it. And it popped out. And then I got it online within just a few months. So that's about a star being who was in lessons to come to Earth, to go to Washington, D.C. to help out on a geopolitical scale. But the woman whose body she was going to take over, because she would be a walk-in, decided to live. So she got diverted to Kansas. And I lived in Kansas, so I could write from experience there. I lived there for 3 years, 1 month, 1 week, and 1 day. Not that anyone was counting. So she wakes up in a hospital, and her family is around her. The Missy, whose body she took over, her family doesn't know that this isn't Missy. They just think she has amnesia. So it's really funny. And that was a lot of fun to write, to really, like, try to experience taking a shower in a grown-up human body for the very first time, or having a Frappuccino or chocolate or all the stuff we do every day. What would that be like for the very first time if you just popped into a human body and were experiencing it? So that was a ton of fun to write.
Yeah, I think we had one of the other appearances that you had on our show. You had talked about that, and also the one about the healer.
Yeah, Spellweaver.
Spellweaver.
He's a healer. Yeah. She's a healer during the burning times. And I was in Scotland in 1999, just on a bus going across the island of Mull, and I was looking over at the mainland of Scotland, and I just remembered those mountains and those hills, and I remembered this life I have for years. And my sister came to visit me in Kansas once. We were driving down a highway off the big highways. And she said, "Kansas is beautiful." And I was like, yeah. She was telling me about this life she remembered as a sister of a healer, and she had to watch her burn, and she couldn't do anything to help her. And I pulled the car over, and I said, "I just wrote this book about this, about a healer who's burned at the stake, and her sister is mute. Everybody thinks she's very simple, but she's not. But she couldn't do anything about the burning." And it's a lot. That was hard to write. That was a very hard book to write. And I finally just said, okay, work on it 5 minutes a day. And I finally got the burning scene. I wrote that and got it over with so I could concentrate more on the love scenes and the scenes with the sisters and the healing and the hills and all that. But that was a very moving moment where my sister and I, in this lifetime, remembered this lifetime from the two sisters' vantage points 500 years ago.
Was that kind of therapeutic for you to do that? To write that and get it out?
Yeah. And that moment where we, in the car, where we both were remembering, we just looked at each other and just started crying and hugged each other. And like that life was kind of healed in that moment. It was truly one of moments. When I die, that'll be one of the moments I'll remember.
Yeah.
Really special. Yeah.
So, and then the book that you had about the angels, which one was that?
That's Angels on Overtime. And that, when my current husband got divorced from his wife, that day he wrote a list of 40 things he wanted in his next and last wife. And he was specific. He was saying things like intelligent, at peace with her world, and he wanted a female. he wanted her between 5'10 and 6 feet and 5'11, and he wanted long, long legs. My legs aren't just long; they're a 36-inch inseam. So he had all these things: spiritual, emotional, intellectual, and physical. And the last thing on this list was she has her own list, and I meet all of her criteria. And I did, and he did, and he still does. I wanted, you know, strong and powerful, spiritual, a family man, things like that. So when we got together and we had these lists, and we met online, and we met on June 21st, 2006, and 3 weeks later I went to Kansas. That's the reason I ended up in Kansas. And 2 days later we were engaged, and a week later I was living in Kansas from a surfer town in California. So that's how fast that happened. And we would talk about how in the world he wanted blue eyes that sparkle. I mean, he was so specific. It's like he just conjured me up and called me in. So we talk about this so much, and we just pictured like these angels, like, well, here's one in California, but she's married. Oh, well, that's not going to work. Well, how married is she? Well, she's on her way out of this marriage.
Because
around the time he wrote that list, I was having conversations with some being in my bedroom saying, well, if you want me to leave him, you know. So that's where that book came out. We all have the premise is that we all have these teams of angels trying to move us in the right direction, but you know how stubborn humans are. And so
right.
And a lot of the book is true. One scene in particular, I think I mentioned this one other time. I was driving down the freeway in L.A., the 10, and a voice in my head very clearly said, change lanes. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and there was a car barreling down the lane next to me, so I was going to wait until it passed. And the voice said, Ann, this is not the time to be polite. Change lanes right now. And I did, making that person swerve. And just then, the truck in front of me stopped short because there was a crate in the highway. And the truck behind me slammed into it. So I would have been lunch meat, if I hadn't changed. And, I mean, it was really a matter of seconds that I got out of the way. So that stuff like that is in the book. And I have the angels doing, oh, no, don't ever hit a pothole, you know, do all the things that angels would do to get people to pass and stuff like that. So that was another fun, really fun book to write. Deep and funny, like all of them. It has its deep, very deep moments, too.
Right,
I have to say, Spellweaver is not so funny. And neither is
what?
Mary's Mess. I have to say, Spellweaver is not known for its humor, and neither is the one about Mary Magdalene, but there's still humor infused in there a little bit, not as much as the others.
And then the another one that you mentioned about the actor, which one was that?
Oh, Life in the Hollywood Lane. Yeah, I worked in L.A. in talent management for a while. That was the most fun job I ever had. Oh, my goodness. And one of our actors committed suicide, and she was so beautiful, so talented. She was a stand-up comic, and just nobody could believe she did that. And a couple years after that, this story just came to me, and I wanted to celebrate her and honor her journey no matter how it ended. So this is another internal journey from her best friend who had to grapple with her committing suicide and figuring out how, or like why and how this could have happened and all that. And that also has a lot of humor in it. So that one's deep and funny too.
Yeah.
But
it seems like a lot of your books are therapeutic, not only for you, but for the people who read them.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, without being, you know, blatantly, you know, you kind of weave it in, and it's subtle. But, yeah, it seems
right.
That there's been, you've covered a lot of ground. I mean, figuratively and literally. Yeah, so you've been around the world twice.
Yeah, two complete circumnavigations, starting from California and then there. Yeah,
was it ground, air, water, all three?
All three. Mostly air, some ground, a little bit of water, not much.
What is the strangest place you've ever been?
Oh, wow. I'd have to say Oman, the Sultanate of Oman. I didn't see a single woman there the whole time I was there. It was like they had them tucked away somewhere. It was so hot, and people were very polite to me, the men, but I could tell they weren't happy to be a Western woman in jeans and, you know, just doing her thing. And it was weird. It was, I don't have to go back there, but I I send a lot of light there, that whole region, a lot, every day.
Yeah. I just like, oh, you're not in Kansas anymore. Yeah, yeah.
I'll
well,
take
that's,
Kansas over some places.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, have you been? Obviously, you've been to Australia and then New Zealand, and have you been to the like around the middle of the globe, or have you been north and south as well?
Yeah, all of them.
All of them.
I actually met my previous husband in New Zealand. He's Australian. And I remember when the plane was circling into New Zealand, I just thought, oh, my goodness, I'd love to meet someone here and come back here a lot. And, well, yep, that happened.
Be careful what you wish for. Yeah.
The last day of my trip in New Zealand, I met him, and I left the next day for Australia anyway, because you're not supposed to stay anywhere just for some guy. But I was like, you, that was the nicest guy you've ever met. So I ended up going back, and we ended up getting married later that year. That just seems to be my style. And that lasted 17 years, though. I mean, it wasn't, and so has this one. The current one has been 18 years, so they, you know, they're not fly-by-nights, that's for sure.
Well, that's a good thing. So, and how long did it take you to go around the world two times? Was this over years?
Well, the first one was a year. So Hawaii, Fiji, New Zealand, Australia, then up through Asia, Nepal, India, and then over to Europe and then home. And then the next one included South America and Africa and more Australia and stuff, because we went to see his family. But, yeah, and I've been to all 50 states, too, driving through all of them. So,
wow.
Alaska. Yeah, I just have this wandering foot.
You do. You do. So what is on the horizon for you?
Well, I have a couple more books that I'm working on. One is about the tech executive who leaves her narcissistic tech bro husband, like an Elon Musk type, and goes home to mother. And she gets home to her from San Francisco to Colorado, and her mom isn't there. And she says, "Where's mom?" He goes, "I don't know. She just left a few days ago and said she'd be back in a week or so." Well, it's January 6th, 2021. And they turn on the TV, and there she is at the Capitol. So that's the premise of that story. So another big clash of totally liberal San Franciscan and Colorado mom who was at the Capitol on January 6th. So,
wow.
Yeah, and then I have some more stories I'm working on, too. I have one that I've been thinking about for a long time about Athena. So every time Lavendar mentions Athena, my ears just like perk up and I'm right there. But anything she ever has to say about her. So that I'm working on too, and a couple others. So lots going on.
Well, you just have such a deep well of creativity that you just keep having great books come out. So I think is Bazoomerangs your 10th or 11th book?
Well, 7th one up on Amazon, and I wrote two before that, but they, let's just call them practice ones. And then I have the one I'm working on now, another one I've finished, which is about calling in the love of your life. So I'm looking for a publisher for that. And then I have, the others, they're all in process. So there are actually 11 finished books. No.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is so wonderful. Oh, yeah, and I think writing a book on how to call in, like, you know, like you and your husband did, people would just love to know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. He still feels brand new. I mean, he feels forever and brand new. It's like we look at each other like, how in the world? This is fabulous.
Yeah.
So, oh, one other book I'm working on. You mentioned in the intro, my intro, that I'd been to Vietnam with a group of vets. One of them had the most fascinating story. He worked in military intelligence, and he would calculate the coordinates with a protractor. This was before computers, for the bomb Laos. We weren't supposed to be bombing Laos. And when Nixon sent a congressional contingent through to make sure we weren't engaging in war crimes like bombing Laos and Cambodia, he almost told them, he almost reached out and tapped one of them on the shoulder and wanted to show them the picture he was looking at and say, this is Laos. But the sign over his desk had been changed to North Vietnam. The signs for Laos and Cambodia had both been changed to North Vietnam and South Vietnam when the contingent went through. But he didn't, because they had been threatened with, if anybody told, his commanding officer lined them all up and said, these people, Congress, don't have the necessary security clearance or the need to know what we're doing. And anyone who takes it upon himself, and they were all himself, to tell them, it'll be considered treason in a time of war. And the punishment for that is execution. So he was about to tell one of them, and his commanding officer looked over at him, and he just chickened out, and it haunted him for the rest of his life. And he had an amazing life in addition to that. So that's another book I'm working on, too. I actually wrote a screenplay of that and tried to get Oliver Stone's attention, and one of his people called me and said, Oliver told me to tell you, would you please tell Anne very nicely that nobody's interested in Vietnam anymore? But that was a while ago. We'll try it again.
Yeah. Well, I want to say once again that your book, Bazoomerangs, is coming out tomorrow. And it will be on Amazon as well as your website and other booksellers?
It's getting to other booksellers, not quite yet, but it's on Amazon right now. You can pre-order a Kindle if anybody wants to go on and get a Kindle tonight. I know most people listen to this to the show later, but by the time most people tune into the show, it'll all be up on Amazon. Kindle and paperback, and it's also on Smashwords if anybody wants. The younger folks seem to like Smashwords, so we're doing that to get their attention on it.
Yeah. Good. And once again, for our listeners, your website is ann.crawford.net, and you've got great sayings on there as well as your books, and people can see what you're up to next. So it's just been a joy having you here.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
No. Well, the other day I was doing a podcast with someone, and she asked what the best moments of my career had been. And I told her, you know, it was like the award for my book and the one for the Vietnam documentary. But there's this quote from a journalist asked David Bowie, what do you think is your greatest achievement? And he said, marrying my wife. And the journalist said, but as a musician? And he said, nothing else matters. So,
wow.
The love in our life, and it doesn't have to be a husband or a wife or a partner. It could be, you know, just a fur friend, a fur baby. Just, I think the love in our life is really what truly matters. So that's just another thing I wanted to say.
Well, as the love we give and the love we receive, because without that, it just everything else seems a little pointless.
Right. Absolutely.
So, well, Ann, it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we're real proud of you and looking forward to all of these other books you've got in the fire. So let us know when you're ready to come back on. And
I will.
And your latest book is called Bazoomerangs, and it's on Amazon as well as anncrawford.net. So you take care. Have a great summer until we talk again.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Such
okay.
a joy.
Yeah, nice to have you back on, Ann. So good night.
Night.
And that we are going to wrap it up now and just want to remind you to keep gratitude in your heart and give compassion instead of judgment. Until next time, good night, everyone.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.